You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
It's gonna be a football game tonight, now.
No doubt.
It's gonna be a football game
here.
Okay.
I done been here.
All right, let's go, baby. Hey.
Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
And the dream season is now complete. The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
Swing and a pop-up. Shot the ball down the line and foul ground. He's got plenty of room, and he's got it! And the Giants have won. They have won the World Series for the third time in 5 years.
5 to go. For the third time in 6 years, the Blackhawks are Stanley Cup champions. The final whistle sounds! The Los Angeles Galaxy are the first to 5.
Gentlemen, football to football.
And your host, Sean Garmer and Matthew Pollard.
Hello and welcome to another Football to Football special edition. I'm going to be up front here. Work just freaking screwed me tonight, and I was supposed to be off so I could watch the entire game. I unfortunately could not. I watched the last 25 minutes, but thankfully Matt is going to be on and can save me here. So what's going to happen is you're going to hear a lot of Matt and me just asking a bunch of questions. So, oh crap, I always mean to take the, there you go. All right, Matt, are you there?
At your service.
All right, well, you're definitely going to be, thankfully, you're here at my service today, because if not, this would be bad.
Yes.
Of course, my usual co-host, Mr. Matt Pollard, how are you doing?
Spent explaining to my little brother,
my dad, what I meant when I was using the word CONCACAF as a verb.
Hold on, you're gonna have to say that again because I apparently had it on mute. Sorry.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So between about the 10th and the 15th minute of the match, I had to explain to my brother and my dad what I meant when I was using the word CONCACAF as a verb. And I think that was very much a theme in this match, among other things. So.
Well, interesting. I mean, it's never anything new for CONCACAF games in general.
But for two people who are casual fans who are becoming more regular watchers of U.S. soccer and of the U.S. men's national team, this concept of the way that CONCACAF manifests itself and the way that they play soccer when they play each other is a little bit of a foreign concept to them. So things that you and me would just sort of watch, and that's the way it is. We're not happy about it, but it's the way it is. Obviously, they were all up in arms.
All right. Well, I only watched the last 25 minutes of this thing. What would you say happened in like the first 65 minutes? I mean, I know we had two goals, like one lucky one there from Dempsey. How did we look in that first 65 minutes? You say that, were we convincing? Was it ugly the whole time?
It was very back and forth. It was almost, there were events happened that radically changed the style, that radically changed the style and the level of play. I think the U.S. came out and I thought that they were I thought they were sleepwalking for the first 20 minutes. They looked very disjointed. They weren't doing a whole lot, stringing any passes together. And I felt like, I think I tweeted this out, Honduras came out like this was an elimination World Cup match, and they were absolutely on fire. They were doing everything that they could, creating a bunch of chances. Brad Guzan had an excellent save right off his right hand, diving inside his own six-yard box that probably could have been a goal. Kyle Beckerman had one or two, a header and then another clearance on another play that were excellent. The U.S. just seemed to be surviving, just trying to roll with the punches as they came from Honduras. And then they had a few good plays. They ended up winning the corner. And I remember Yedlin was standing over the corner, and I thought immediately, oh, God, what are we doing? And then Yedlin just sort of tips it off to Bradley, who has kind of a better angle for his in-swinging ball. And that looked to be directed more towards John Brooks, who was on the far post. Josie Altidore was on the near post. That guy ends up getting deflected out. Josie ends up getting the ball on the near post. He tries to make a move. Take a shot, rebounds immediately off the keeper. And, you know, some people will say that, oh, Clint Dempsey headed it in. Really, I think Clint Dempsey was just standing where the ball came off of the keeper such that it hit his face and went into the net. So, like you said, I thought that was very much a lucky goal. But at that point, I thought for the U.S., you'd take it. I mean, they hadn't been playing well, but, you know, they get a lucky bounce. And immediately there, it was almost like, you know, the team snapped their fingers, and immediately there was a sigh of relief. They were a lot more confident. They were stringing the ball together, making a lot more passes. Chandler was overlapping. Yedlin was taking on defenders. I thought Giassi Zardes was very active in the final third, trying to keep possession and also getting more out towards the midfield. So that pretty much continued until halftime, even though the U.S. didn't come up with anything too dangerous that could have scored, with the exception of, I believe, there was a counterattack in which Michael Bradley delivered a through pass to Yedlin, who was in on goal, and Yedlin just couldn't get his second touch, chipped over the keeper, and ended up going out for a rebound. And then I think a Honduran player cleared it out of bounds. So that was pretty much it for the first half. And then I think it was a little bit slower to start off in the second half, leading up to the 60th minute, a little bit back and forth. But I think the U.S. was sort of settling to see what Honduras was going to do. And Honduras really didn't muster anything that was terribly dangerous. And then at that point, Josie got subbed out, and then you got to see what was happening. What did you see from the final 25 minutes, Sean?
I saw a very tired U.S. team. I saw I forgot the name of the player that got subbed in that scored the goal for Honduras, just blow by Alvarado. And it seemed like at that point, between Brooks and Alvarado, they just weren't in sync at all. There was times where it looks like Brooks should have been in a spot and he wasn't there. Did Brad Evans start the game?
No, Brad Evans was a substitute. So Brad Evans came on for Timmy Chandler. Wando came on in the 60th minute for Josie, and then
so
Graham Soucy came on.
Why do you think those switches were made? Was there a reason? Were they having bad games? Or?
Josie had maybe one or two good chances. I know, you know, he created the shot that ultimately led to the first goal, but Josie did not play well at all. I thought he had a relatively decent game against Guatemala. I was there in Nashville for it. You know, if he scores that penalty and he scores the goal, then everybody's saying, yeah, Josie had a great game. If that penalty doesn't happen or if Josie doesn't take it, I think people say he has a good game. And then coming off of, you know, I think the only reason where people want to say he had a bad game was because he should have converted on the penalty. But, you know, I thought he was decent against Guatemala. He looked off in this game, to be honest, Sean. He had a few good moments with hold-up play, but, you know, the U.S. as a whole did not do a very good job with the high press, especially when Honduras was dominating possession. Josie was the worst of that with all. No pressure, no energy whatsoever. He looked really off on a lot of the balls that he got to. He wasn't stringing passes together. No combination with Dempsey or Bradley or any of the wide players. And when he didn't get into that many dangerous positions, and in positions where he had a chance to score, he didn't really do anything with them. So I don't know what was up with him. If it's just, you know, if it's just one bad game, then, you know, I think that's fine. Matt Doyle made a suggestion that he looked a little bit off running, sort of implying that maybe he's not 100%. And if Josie Altidore isn't 100%, I think we're upriver without a paddle for sure. As far as the Jimmy Chandler substitute, I think Chandler just looked gassed. I thought he had a relatively okay game. He didn't have that many he wasn't that high. He didn't have that good of a conversion on passes in the final third. But other than that, I thought that was fine. And, you know, Brad Evans is a pretty safe bet at right back. You know, I think I'm still probably apologizing to him for, you know, ripping him on the show before he scored that goal against Jamaica in a World Cup qualifying last cycle. And then I think Zardes just looked tired, and you figure you get some fresh legs on for Zusi to maybe go root one soccer with Wando. But, you know, I think all the substitutes were timely and they made sense at the time, with the one question being, did Josie just have a bad game or is he hurt? Because that's really where my primary concern is for this team going into Haiti.
Yeah, I'm so glad that they can make those switches after you get out of the group stage, because I don't know if he keeps playing like that, you might want to, you know, call Juan Agudelo or something, because it's that you don't want that going into the games that are going to be very important, you know, especially if things go to plan in Costa Rica and Mexico win their groups. You don't want to be playing Costa Rica with injured strikers or whatever. To his credit, you know, Clint Dempsey did what he needed to do in this game. I think from what I saw at that point, you know, the humidity and the heat in Dallas was getting to the players. I mean, I don't know if it's fitness or just that, but the team just looked like they did not really want to go forward at that point. Honduras really wanted that game, though. They were going after it, just like, you know, you said, seemed like to be a whole thing throughout the whole game. I was worried a little bit once that, you know, first goal went in for them, that we were going to get a draw here, because at points it really looked like Honduras deserved a draw the way they were going after it. And just, I don't know about you, but maybe, I don't know, I'm not convinced with Alvarado. And I don't know if it's Alvarado and Brooks together just don't work, or I don't know why you don't start Omar here. I mean,
You should have saw my Twitter feed on that, Sean. You know, I was thinking, you know, my big concern going into the this Gold Cup and into the friendly against Guatemala is I don't know that we had seen the preferred back four any time in the 2015 calendar year. And, you know, I'm fine with Jurgen experimenting, you know, in the aftermath of the World Cup, you know, last year, but, you know, starting with January camp, it was about preparing for the Gold Cup, and every single game it seemed like it was a slightly different lineup. And I understand, you know, MLS is in season, you know, there are injuries, some of the he calls on the European players for the European based road games. I'm fine with that, but at some point you have to say, okay, this is my rough draft of what I think the back line should look like. Let's put it out there and see what happens, and give them some time. And then come back and maybe make a few changes, and then give that some time. And then at that point, maybe we're ready to say, okay, we can trot out by, you know, version 3.0 and see how that looks in a tournament that matters. And every single game, it was a different lineup. And you know, going into this, we thought, okay, you know, he called in Omar. Matt Beisler was on the, you know, was on the 35-man preliminary roster. And you got to think the only reason Matt Beisler wasn't called in is because Sporting Kansas City is the walking wounded right now. I've got to think that if any defender's getting called in as one of the six moves after the group stage, it's got to be Beisler in that. So you figure, okay, you know, Omar, pretty experienced, you know, John Brooks, maybe we put those two together since, you know, Alvarado didn't play that well. And, you know, they can mess around with the fullbacks because, you know, those are a little bit more fluid because Yedlin's been playing really well and they have Fabian Johnson. And then so he puts from left to right, it was Fabian Johnson, John Brooks, Omar Gonzalez, Timmy Chandler in the game against Guatemala. And I thought they played fine, with the exception of maybe the fullbacks didn't have real good chemistry with their midfield partner in the diamond. You know, Zusi, it was his first game back in 2015. You know, for as much of Yedlin and Chandler have practiced together and played together, I really would think that their communication's a little bit better. But other than that, I had no complaints with that backline. I figure, okay, we're going with Omar and Brooks in the middle, Fabian and Chandler on the outside. That's what we're sticking with. It's going to work. And then Jurgen pulls out Alvarado, and I immediately think this is not a good move at all. Omar should be in, and Alvarado gets burned on that goal that Honduras scores. So, I mean, I've got nothing against the kid. It's only his seventh cap, but he's not experienced, and he shouldn't be playing in a game that matters, especially when we've got, you know, an MLS all-star and possibly one of our best center backs in the pool on the bench.
Yeah, and especially because, you know, if you are planning for that, not that – you know, if Brooks plays well, he should deserve his spot. And there were, like I said, there were times, even in the time that I saw, that Brooks just looked like he didn't know where he's supposed to be. And maybe that's because Alvarado sort of wasn't playing well either. But if you're planning to bring Beasler in, his best partner is Omar. Why not already have Omar playing in these games so he's accustomed to playing again? He's already been playing in these games, and then you can slot in Beasler if you want to. Let's say Brooks isn't playing well, or you still feel like you want to go back to that partnership that you know. Because at the end of the day, it's about winning this tournament. It's not about trying out everybody. I know that we still have that playoff in hand, but you don't want to have to go to that playoff against Mexico or Costa Rica or whoever it is. You know, could be Honduras for the way they played in this game, or Panama, or whatever. But you don't want to go into that playoff where you don't know what can happen. This is a CONCACAF thing. It's not like Mexico, where they were going into the World Cup against a playoff for New Zealand, where you know they were going to win before they stepped on the field. I think you have to play your best. You don't trot out, let's try out this, because Honduras is not, you know. And even if you're going to do that, do it the next game against Haiti. Don't do it against somebody that's actually had your number at times, you know, in Honduras. A team that they're going to be gunning, they're going to be coming, because they're one of the forces of CONCACAF, whether we, you know, some people want to admit it or not. And you're in the toughest group in this tournament. You don't want to sit there and have games off, and the whole sleepwalking in the first 20 minutes doesn't seem like to me what they should be doing. I get it. You still feel like you're not playing these, you know, big-time European teams or whatever. Just, you've got to come out and show who you are to me. I don't think you can come out here and just sleepwalk through games, and then I'm worried about, you know, what are they going to do next game against a, you know, competition that's probably going to seem to them even far lesser than what they just faced. So, I don't know. If I'm Klinsmann, you come out with your A team, and you show that. You know, I mean, I guess we can kind of correlate it to the U.S. women and what they did in the World Cup. You know, you kind of got through the group stage and then you turned it on when it mattered. But to me, it's about consistency, you know, and I'm just worried about, we already saw Haiti, you know, Panama kind of played this game where they score and then they kind of just fell off, is from what you were telling me. And, you know, Haiti forces a draw out of the U.S. too. We're having a muddy group as it is.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, Sean. You know, I agree completely. I think, you know, Haiti needs to be the warm up game for Panama, because Panama is arguably the most dangerous opponent that the U.S. is going to face in the group stage. I think you put that A team out there, and you know, if they beat Haiti, you know, I think Honduras and Panama very well could be a draw. You know, maybe even Honduras wins that. So, you know, lucky to get 3 points tonight. You know, you beat Haiti, you're for sure out of the group stage. You know, barring some crazy incident where you lose or, you know, don't advance on goal differential, you know, in that, because of that, the result in that third game, you got to figure you're fine. You know, I figure, you know, use this as the dress rehearsal, then Panama's the real step up, because then after that you're going into the quarterfinals. You'll get a little bit of a reshuffling of the deck, you know, for Jurgen to play those moves. But, you know, whatever Jurgen has in his brain, that with this 23-man roster is the best 11 and the best 7 off the bench for the total best 18, put that out against Haiti. You know, use that as a dry practice run. And then, you know, if that doesn't work or you feel like tweaking something, tweak one or two things for Panama, but don't completely change everything. So then, you know, we'll get 2.0 for Panama. And then at that point, you know, probably, you know, I think we can both safely say that the U.S. is going to advance out of the group on this one. And then at that point, you know, change a few players. And at that point, you've got 3.0 and hopefully a finalized and quality lineup that's got good cohesion and a good formation going into the knockout round. But, you know, I think, you know, there are concerns. I think everything is fixable. But, you know, at the end of the day, they got a result and hopefully they learned a lesson. You know, I think there's concern. There's absolutely no reason to panic right now for this team in the group stage. You know, Mexico is a little bit of a walking wounded at this point. It's just, you know, can we beat Panama? Can we beat Costa Rica? If we can do those two things, we're off to the Confederations Cup.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about just, let's say, you know, because what you presented is a big case, because Panama and Honduras always play each other really tough. that's going to be a scrappy game in which you could get a 0-0 whatever draw. And you're going into this game against Panama where Panama has to win. Or they at least have to get a draw to get 3 points to be one of the best thirds, you know, or something like that. And it's they're going to be gunning at the U.S. And it's going to be, are you going to be prepared for that? Or are you going to, I mean, I don't think they're going to take them lightly at that point because they know what they're going to be facing. But, you know, just I just hope that we see a completely different team against Haiti, or I'm going to start really worrying about what's going on. And hopefully Jurgen learns something from this game and says, okay, I can't tinker right now. Let's get out of the group stage. And then, you know, if I find something in a substitution that works or whatever, then, you know, put that out there. But I kind of liked everything from a standpoint that you're telling me. Just, I would put Omar back on the back line. And how do you think Fabian Johnson played today?
I thought Johnson was fine. I don't think, you know, he has a little bit of a bad rap for falling asleep defensively, but I don't think that was a problem. I thought that he could have done a little bit better job going forward, but, you know, in the first warm-up game, he was with Zusi, where, you know, maybe that overlapping runs a little bit better because Zusi plays a little bit more defense than Zardes will. And, you know, Zusi's mentality is, let me get the ball decently in the final third and then either cut inside and serve or serve directly. Whereas I think Zardes is more willing to go forward, you know, towards the end line and then into the box. So when you have that midfield partner who's going to push further, you're less willing as a outside back to press forward yourself. So normally you lay back a little bit more, whereas I think with Zusi in there, Zusi won't go as forward, so that allows Fabian to get a little bit more forward. So I like what Zardes has done. I don't think that, you know, some people were freaking out on Twitter about, you know, Zardes is not a midfielder. You know, I still think his best position is, you know, up top as a striker, you know, how he plays with the LA Galaxy. I think the one aspect in which him being in the midfield works is it's a position on the field where it allows him to use his speed. His speed has a more significant advantage than it would as a striker. And I also think, you know, whereas a forward, you have to anticipate runs to get into the dangerous position to score the goals. From the midfield, Zardes can be a little bit more reactionary since he still hasn't caught up to the game mentally with where his body and his talent is at the level that he's playing right now. So I think, you know,
I understand, too, that it has to do with, at that point, you had the subs in for Guatemala as well and all that. But I like the industry that I saw from Greg Garza and Zardes together.
Absolutely.
I really liked that pairing. So, for me, I mean, I know you got Fabian Johnson, and I know you got to use him and all that kind of stuff. But I wouldn't be totally against sitting Fabian, or maybe you put Fabian and Garza or something like that and see how that works, because I just really like Zardes and Garza on that left side. I really liked what I saw from that. And I have a question for you, kind of sort of like what we saw with Avi Womack. If Josie has another bad game, do you sit him?
I guess my issue with that, Sean, you know, I lamented on that in the 23-man roster sort of, I won't call it an article, I'll call it more of a complaint on this one. I think, you know, similar to Brazil, you know, we looked at this roster and, you know, it's kind of Josie or bust. If you're going to sit Josie, then what are you going to do? I mean, can Wando go 90 minutes and be a hold up striker? That's not really his natural role. And then the only other main forward you have on the roster is Aaron Johansson, and he's more of a Dempsey backup. So you're not going to put Dempsey into that awkward position. And then at that point, you know, we're getting into the whole mess that, you know, led to Michael Bradley being a hot mess in Brazil last summer. So I think, you know, your best
option,
if you're going to
again say that, why is Klinsmann not having a backup for Josie? Like, why?
Well, so here's my crazy Galaxy fanboy scheme on this one. If you're going to sit Josie, then I say you start Zardes up top.
That's what I would have said.
And I think, you know, his speed won't be there necessarily, but, you know, if you put the right pieces around Zardes, it works.
So I'm gonna use a galaxy analogy on this one. You want a team that's going to possess the ball, that is going to get him a not necessarily a high volume, but a good number of chances. And then you want him with a strike partner who he can lay the ball off to, who's going to be, I'm not going to say a ball hog because that's kind of what Keane is sometimes, but is regularly going to want and is naturally going to possess the ball more than he is. And you want someone who's maybe going to direct traffic and tell him where to go. When he has direction, when he has a sense of where the traffic and where the play is going, he can make the run. And then at that point, he's in position. He's got the composure and the talent to finish the play off. So in that sense, Dempsey is almost sort of his pseudo Keane role, where Dempsey and Bradley are going to see more of the ball. Zardes doesn't need to hold on to it a whole lot. Zardes can play a little bit of a hold-up play. He can combine with his outside players. And then in that point, any direction, if Zardes is running around like a chicken with his head cut off, Dempsey's a smart enough player where he's going to direct him or naturally get him in a position to be dangerous. Then at that point, he just needs to finish the chances off. If you do all of those things, Zardes is an MLS all-star at the MLS level, and I think he can be, for where he is in his career right now, he is a good enough option in this tournament. So that's my crazy scheme in terms of on the Galaxy side of things, where I say people who were poo-pooing saying, oh God, it's Josie or bust for the Gold Cup. It's just like Brazil last summer all over again. I say, no, I think we do have an option. It's just a little bit, it's just not necessarily what people were suspecting. And then I guess going back to one of your other points, Sean, I like Greg Garza coming off the bench right now. I still think Fabian Johnson's the better starter. So if you're not going to start Josie, then I say you put Zardes up top and you start Zusi and have Zusi combine with Fabian Johnson, because then that left side is going to get you so much service, long ball service. And then on the right side with Yedlin and Chandler, you're going to get a lot of penetration and deep lying runs into the box that are going to get you more on the short side, both of which Zardes can handle either with his head or with his feet. And that also, in spreading out the field and pulling the defense out wide, that leaves space in the middle. Bradley can make runs, and Dempsey can also do his thing as well. So I think that's an option if Josie's not able to go. I think, unfortunately, what we end up could seeing, I think, unfortunately, might be 90 minutes of Wando, which against Haiti, I think will be fine. Against Panama, I'd have some concerns about.
All right, fair enough. Anything out of that game with Panama and Haiti that kind of drew your attention as far as what the U.S. should, as far as, you know, what Jurgen Klinsmann should be thinking about, or any kind of game plan or anything?
I thought Panama, you know, it is just Haiti, so, you know, maybe we have to take that with a grain of salt. But I thought Panama had sort of a renewed sense of speed. You know, I talked about this in my article where I was reviewing a few of the lineups. So the new head coach for Panama, you know, came in, you know, after they're kind of reeling since, you know, being eliminated from the World Cup by the United States. And ever since then, they basically, the national team has basically cut bait with every single one of their veterans who is not significant at their own club level. And they've brought in a lot of young, youthful talent that has a lot of speed. So it's almost like they've got a new pep in their step. And they were very aggressive. They dominated possession against Haiti, and they were really coming at them on the ball. And really, you know, it's kind of what's a good example I can come up with? This kind of when you remember, like, last year with Federico Higuain with the Crew, where it was basically Higuain and a bunch of kids, and, you know, Higuain was the veteran presence, sort of, you know, being the do it all from an offensive standpoint, and then he was just sort of spreading it out, and the kids were just, you know, they were just like hamsters, whether like hamsters in their hamster wheel, and they were so excited and they had so much energy and they were running around. That's basically what Panama's doing right now with Blas, where Blas is just sort of the centerpiece of the offense, and if he can't do it himself, he's getting it out to some young gun, and they're just sort of running with it. It was one of the Blas set up. He had the assist on the goal. I can't remember offhand who scored, but I would say that's sort of a new look for Panama that's, I'm not going to say Costa Rica-like, but it's just, I see a lot of speed and I see a lot of technical talent, where their immediate thought wasn't, you know, okay, we're coming in against Haiti, we're better and we're more veteran than them, let's just go out and CONCACAF them. I really thought that, you know, for a good chunk of the game, they were really genuinely trying to, you know, play soccer, not necessarily go tiki-taka on them per se. But, you know, I say that's something where I think, you know, where earlier iterations of Panama, especially on the road or in the Gold Cup in U.S. territory, you know, they were maybe at times willing to sit back and let the U.S. see most of the ball and then just sort of play for counterattacks and set pieces. I really think that this Panama team would, right now, after seeing what they saw against Honduras, like if the U.S. had to play Panama next instead of Haiti, I really think Panama would come out aggressive just the way that Honduras did in the first 20 minutes. I think they would say, you know, we can go out against this team, we can outpossess them, we can create chances, we can go at their defense and create something. And then, you know, if we finish off one of our chances, then, you know, we can always resort back to that, you know, low-lying, organized defensive play, and we have to make it ugly. We know how to make it ugly. So I think that's really, you know, it's an extra tool they have in their pockets where if the U.S. is having an off game, I think Panama could really challenge and, you know, make it rough and, you know, give the U.S. some trouble at times. So that would be something I would be wary about. We'll see how they do against Honduras, who are certainly better than Haiti. But, you know, as long as the U.S. takes care of business against Haiti, and, you know, then at that point they'll be playing for a particular result against Panama, and I think they'll be fine.
All right, since we won't be back here until the next game on Friday, looking at the other two groups, let's do some pick-ems here for the first two games in these groups. Costa Rica and Jamaica, will you score line there?
I'm going to say the Ticos win this by a score of 1-0, but I think Jamaica puts up a really good fight in this game.
I think Jamaica, they brought their A team for this one. Oh, I think you're getting a 2-1 Costa Rica, but it's, like you said, it's going to be close.
Okay, Sean, before we go any further, I have to ask, in the MLS pick'em, Simon Borg predicted Jamaica in the final. Are you going to be that bold?
No. I said that they could. I said I could see them beating, because I had them as my second place team.
Okay.
So I think I said I could see them beating Guatemala and then maybe giving Mexico a fight. And possibly even beating them, but as far as I would have them, it'd be the semifinals. We're not getting that.
Okay. Yeah, I could see them making a semifinal. That would be a great accomplishment for them.
El Salvador and Canada.
I'm going to say Canada wins this 2-0. I think Canada, you know, they've got, I think Kyle Larin they've had a few good youngsters come into the squad. I think, you know, they look a little bit renewed after last cycle. They did excellent in their two most recent World Cup qualifying games. So I think Kyle Larin and Russell Tybert and company, I think they take care of business.
I'm going to go on the hope side with that one too. I'll say a 1-0 Canada, but El Salvador is always tricky. They seem to come to play with these tournaments and then always wind up surprising. So, yeah, I'll say Canada 1-0 for that. So Trinidad and Tobago against Guatemala.
I'm going to say it's a 1-1 draw in this one.
I'll say a 2-0 Guatemala. They got those veterans that do know how to score. Mexico and Cuba.
Oh, Chicharito not going to be available. I can't remember who else is going to be unavailable for Mexico. So it's basically Giovanni Dos Santos or bust for this one. I think Cuba's going to put up a fight, but I think Mexico, maybe similar to the U.S., gets lucky, and I think they end up winning this 2-1.
I'll say like 3-0. This is Cuba we're talking about here. They either come to play or they just stink of the joint, and even though it's Giovanni against the world, I'm not really worried that much about Cuba. Even though they do have that one surprise in them, I don't think it's going to be against Mexico. I think if we see it, it'll be against one of the two other teams.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think we kind of covered it here in a like emergency situation because I didn't watch.
Do we not want to predict the Friday night game, Sean?
Oh yeah. So, what do you think? You think Haiti has a goal in them? You think we're going to be maybe facing what Panama did, or you think we're gonna come out and take the game?
I think they're going to come out and take the game. I think the fact of how ugly it was tonight, I say the United States respond and they get an emphatic 2-0 victory over the Haitians.
I would say 3-0 because I think Jurgen wants to make a statement. I would hope he wants to make a statement before you get to Panama and be like, okay, you know, even if Panama wins that game as Honduras, hey, if you want to get top of the group, you're going to have to go through us, and we're not going to, you know, we're here. So, All right. Well, again, thank you so much, Matt. You made this thing happen because it wouldn't happen without you here tonight. So
I try. We'll be more organized on Friday, I'm sure.
Yeah, Chris said he'll be back for Friday for sure, because it's gonna be much better. I still got to close, so I won't. It'll be the same thing. I'll probably watch the second half, but it'll be much more you two getting to talk, and I can kind of just run things here. But all right, so until Friday night, we shall see you then. Later, everyone.